Crime Obscene is a monthly true crime podcast. Listener discretion is advised. On May 28, 2011, 20-year-old Madison Geraldine Scott, or Maddie, attended a birthday party at Hogsback Lake, approximately 25 kilometers southeast of Vanderhoof, British Columbia. Maddie had attended the party with her friend Jordy Balduke, but as the evening went on and turned to midnight, Maddie retired for the night to the tent she pitched beside her 1990 white Ford F-150 pickup truck. A fight had broken out between Jordy and a few other people at the party and left Jordy injured, and as she was drunk, also felt she needed to leave with her new boyfriend. After trying to talk to Maddie into leaving with them, it was clear Maddie didn't want to get up as she was already settled in for the night, so Jordy left. Between the hours of 3 a.m. and 4 a.m, many of the partygoers had left, and these being some of the last people to physically see the young woman. Many had reported talking to her and even offering her a ride back, but Maddie had declined. At 8:30 a.m, Jordy and her boyfriend returned to the campsite as she had to pick up some clothes and sleeping bag before she went to work. Having arrived, Jordy noticed the tent unzipped with Maddie's sleeping bag and stuffed moved to the side, but with Maddie nowhere to be seen. Jordy stated she did not see Maddie anywhere and never reported the state of the tent to anyone. With a party of over 50 people attending, a large frame of time missing, and the trail getting colder by the minute, an investigation will be launched by the RCMP utilising more investigative tools than have ever been used in a case before in BC history, and with theories involving the proposed Highway of Tears and even serial killer Israel Keyes. Today, we look into the unexpected and truly baffling disappearance of Maddie Scott. Hello, welcome to Crime Obscene. I'm your host, Aaron. Before we start, I would like to tell you a little about the show. Crime Obscene is a monthly true crime podcast that explores unsolved murders, missing persons cases, and beyond. This podcast is run by me and me alone, so your listenership and feedback is greatly appreciated. So why not give me a follow on your favourite podcatcher and a like and a review? This greatly helps out the pod. If you have any feedback, a case suggestion, or just want to drop me a line, you can do so by emailing me at crimeobscenepod@outlook.com, tweet me at crimeobscenepod, or on Instagram by the same name. There is also a Facebook group set up where you can discuss your thoughts on episodes, recommend other pods, or just be part of a community who wants to make a difference. That's Crime Obscene Investigators. Now, let's begin. Chapter 1. Crime Timeline. Madison Geraldine Scott, or Maddie to her friends and family, and will be referred to as such from here on, was born April 29, 1991, to Eldon and Don Scott, and was the middle child of two siblings, Ben and Georgia. Vanderhoof, the town in which Maddie grew up, is in the Buckley-Nechako region of Canada, which boasts many lakes, beautiful sights in forests and mountains. It is a haven for those with an adventurous or outdoorsy streak. So in many ways, it complemented Maddie's personality to a T. The young woman enjoyed dirt biking, horseback riding, figure skating, and sports which showcase this high interest in physical activities associated with the region she lived. This was just one shade of the many colours of her personality, however, as by day she would don her overalls and work her apprenticeship as a heavy-duty mechanic at a logging company with her dad, but by night she enjoyed nothing better than to dress up and socialise with her many friends. As a social butterfly, it wasn't unheard of for Maddie to always have plans. Though many in her life had stated, Maddie had a spontaneous side to her, where, if she felt certain plans had more promise to be fun, she would cancel already made plans in favour of the new ones. A prime example of this would be the day before attending the party at Hogsback Lake. Maddie had plans to meet her cousin, but chose to go to the party instead. All those in Maddie's life were prepared for plenty of fun with her being around, quoted as someone who brought it all together, whether it was being involved in tape comedy sketches her and her drama class did, or it was just a day out biking. Where Maddie was concerned, nothing was off the table. In the independent film made, The Vanishing of Madison Scott, which can be found on YouTube, one of Madison's school teachers, Anna Pye, remembers her fondly as being, quote, a leader in their video projects. She would direct, edit, script everything out, and storyboard everything, end quote. Friday, May 27, 2011, Maddie had been looking forward to the party to happen at the campground. She was to attend with an old high school friend, Jordy Balduke. Though Jordy and Maddie had gone back as far as high school, they weren't super close and drifted apart as many do once upon graduating. It came as a surprise when Balduke had popped back up into Maddie's life with this impromptu invite. Though this did not faze Maddie, as even though she didn't know anyone else that was going to be there, and loosely knew the person whose birthday party it was for, Maddie felt excited just to see where the evening would go and have a good time. The birthday party for the mutual friend Garrett was organised and scheduled on a Facebook event page for 8 p.m. The campgrounds themselves were very rural, and the appeal for this was enthusiastic partygoers would not have to be worried so much about noise constraints and would be able to camp as camping was free, which made it more preferable for people who were to drive. So both Maddie and Jordy bundled into Maddie's white 1990 Ford F-150 pickup truck, packed with a cooler of wine and beer, and set off. It came as a mild surprise for Don Scott when the women returned shortly later. Due to some issues they had noticed with their chosen tents, they had to pick a bigger tent and poles, and as quick as they came, they were gone again. The last time Don heard from Maddie was 11 p.m. over text. Maddie did not seem distressed, but had stated she was in the tent at the time, even though the party around her was going on in full swing, which was strange because Maddie was looking forward to going to the party earlier. From here on, the sequence of events are recalled by Jordy Balduke, so I will do a quick breakdown of events from when Maddie left her home up to the last phone contact she had with her mother. Note, timeline is approximate. 8 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Goes to Hogsback Lake with Jordy and gathers firewood. 8:30 to 9:30, they return back when it is apparent the wrong size of the tent was gone. 9:30 to 10 p.m, tent is set up and Maddie settles in for the night. 10 to 11:30 p.m, Maddie remains in tent despite party continuing outside. Balduke went to the tent after midnight and asked Maddie to leave with her, as she was going back to her boyfriend's house. This was due to a few occurrences during the night, and Balduke had stated an altercation had caused her to, quote, fall into a fire, though it can't be verified if this did occur verbatim, as Balduke was well enough to head to work the next day. So, leaving Maddie alone in the tent, Balduke left. Though the party does wind down slowly over the course of the night, many eyewitnesses do report on seeing Maddie. At 1:40 a.m. approximately, a few partygoers ask Maddie does she want a ride back into town, but Maddie refuses and wants to stay at Hogsback Lake. It would be after 3 a.m. that no further sightings of Maddie are accounted for. Balduke claims she had returned to the campground at 8 a.m. to gather her belongings, and though she saw Maddie's truck, sleeping bag, expensive motorbike gear, and various other belongings present, Maddie was not. The tent was unzipped and her sleeping bag was pushed to the side. Another eyewitness who was cleaning the campsite did see Maddie's tent, which was now zipped up, but didn't check on her as he figured she was still asleep. The next day, on Saturday, a larger party happens in Hogsback Lake, though this party's attendance is 150 people. But when Sunday comes around, and Dawn hadn't heard from her daughter, she was growing more concerned. Calling her daughter, but her cell phone was very spotty in this region, it was hard for Dawn to make contact, and only getting her daughter's voicemail. It was out of understanding for her daughter's independence that Dawn had not been too worried before, but now with 48 hours gone since she last heard from Maddie, she began to reach out to Maddie's friends. After calling Jordy's mother and learning that Balduke had returned early on Saturday the 28th, it was then that the Scots decided to head out to the campground to check on her. When they arrived, they saw Maddie's tent was collapsed and her truck abandoned. Within a few minutes, the RCMP was contacted and Maddie was officially reported missing. Chapter 2, RCMP Investigation. Once Maddie's parents rang the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, or RCMP, and reported her missing, the police began the arduous and near insurmountable task of tracking down the 50 people who attended Garth's party at Hogsback Lake. The force has been quoted in saying they had used more investigative tools than any other case in BC, British Columbia's history. After investigating and polygraphing all the partygoers, it was determined that none of them had any involvement. Next, they went to investigate the friend that had gone with Maddie and promised to camp out with her, Jordy Balduke. Jordy recounted to the RCMP lead investigators on Maddie's case, Sergeant Ken Floyd and Constable Tom Wamskeeter, all the things she remembered when she returned to Hogsback that morning, the tent being unzipped, Maddie's sleeping bag and clothes pushed to the side, and even her rings and earrings on the ground outside the tent, which according to Balduke, Maddie would never take them off. Balduke had been questioned and took two polygraphs over a 3-month period, and in her own words, was repeatedly asked was she involved in Maddie's disappearance. Other ways in which the RCMP investigated Balduke was they gained access to her sleeping bag and pillow from the night, and though the pillow had been washed, the sleeping bag wasn't, and blood was found in it. The blood was determined to be Balduke's, and from her ankle from a school trip years before. With a grilling and polygraph submitted, Balduke had passed and would be crossed off the suspect list. Since the tragic disappearance, Balduke has claimed to be berated on social media and public for leaving her friend alone that night in Hogsback. And in saying this information, I do not want to personally start any witch hunt again. Pointing fingers of blame to anyone will not be productive and will only hinder all other collective efforts in trying to get Maddie's story out and any investigation efforts. Another person of interest that was considered was a 28-year-old logger by the name of Freebjorn Bjornsson. Bjornsson had apparently led a troubled life involving drug abuse, facts confirmed by the police and even his mother. And around the time Bjornsson was said to be involved with Maddie, there were rumours to suggest he was in debt to local drug dealers, which would then fan the rumour mill that Maddie was kidnapped in some attempt to get back at Bjornsson. Leaving no stone unturned, the RCMP investigators did question Bjornsson, and after he volunteered for a polygraph and passed, Bjornsson was cleared. Although, 2 days later, it was discovered he had disappeared, and tragically, 2 weeks from then, Fribjorn Bjornsson's decapitated head was found in an abandoned house in a different town. Though Bjornsson's body has never been found and his case remains unsolved, the RCMP do not believe Maddie's case is linked to that of Bjornsson's. The area around Hogsback has been extensively searched, with the lake right next to where Maddie going missing, which is a lake that is clear water and has 10 plus feet of visibility and 22 feet at its deepest. Divers have searched it. Other searches of the massive campground were performed by foot, quad bikes, horseback, helicopters employing forward-looking infrared, cadaver dogs, and truck, car, and boat, which also used side-scanning sonar in search efforts. Just seeing pictures of Hogsback Lake and the other areas of outdoors in the Buglianichago area, it is very easy to be overwhelmed by the sheer size and density of the area. It truly looks like a horrible, easy place for some kind of tragedy to occur or for foul play to be concealed. As of the RCMP's current standing on the case, it is believed by the investigators that foul play was involved. It is of the opinion of both family and friends, and just by them knowing Maddie's personality, it is highly unlikely she ran away. And without obvious evidence of a struggle or plausible excuse for her to have left her truck, for example, truck trouble, it is believed she was coerced to leave or to have left by her own volition. Animal attack was also considered, with the area being populated by bears, and there were even reports of a rather large cougar being in the area at the time, though the site of Maddie's tent was not ransacked, and the scene did not look like she was jumped at some point. Chapter 3. Highway of Tears. This chapter will not be a full breakdown of all the victims of the Highways of Tears, as that would be an entire episode in itself. This chapter will go into some detail of the area, why it is called the Highway of Tears, and how a lot of people do consider Maddie's case to be connected somehow. Highway 16 is a highway in the BC region of Canada. It is an important section of the Greater Yellowhead Highway and is part of the Trans-Canada Highway. The Highway 16 is a stretch between two points and has been given its macabre moniker due to a series of disappearances and murders of Indigenous women along this particular stretch. Authorities do account for at least 18 women, but locals purport the number could be as high as 30 or more. First documented case was in 1970 to 1979 when a woman by the name of Tracy Clifton went missing, and the exact date when she had gone missing is unknown. After she had an argument with her mother and walked the Highway 16, she was never seen again. The first investigation that the RCMP had begun to look into these cases as being linked opened in 1998, but over the years, a number of people have been convicted in cases cited as being part of the Highway of Tears. Three among them, convicted serial killers Brian Peter Arp, Cody Lechubukov, and Edward Dennis Isaac. In 2005, a provisional funded project was launched by the RCMP entitled EPANA. This project's primary focus was to investigate the unsolved murders and disappearances along Highway 16. Its goal was to also get to the bottom of if the highway was the work of one serial killer or a multitude of killers preying along the highway. By 2006, the caseload had grown to 18 and the geography even branched out beyond Highway 16. EPANA was credited as being responsible for linking the homicide of a 16-year-old girl to that of an American serial killer, Bobby Jack Fowler. Fowler was implicated in many crimes not associated with the Highway of Tears, but it is believed the reason why he's a strong candidate to consider being responsible is he would have worked for a now-closed company called Happy Roofing, which operated in the Prince George stretch of highway in 1974. Fowler died in prison and has never been formally charged in any connection of any of the victims of the Highway of Tears. It is to be stated here, Maddie's family has fought hard to keep Maddie's case and her name off the list of Highway of Tears victims. Other theories and conclusions. Maddie's parents, Dawn and Eldon, have done a lot of work in not only keeping Maddie's case and her story in the public's eye, but also have done some investigative work of their own. In the 48-hour episode dedicated to the Highway of Tears, Maddie's case is discussed, and you can see a scene in which Don and Eldon are in the basement, and they have two big whiteboards where they have notes and discussions of who was at the party that night, leads that might be promising, and so forth. It is indeed tragic when a loved one goes missing, but the slightest bit of light behind this dark cloud above the Scott family is their unified efforts and drive to find answers for their daughter and bring her home is massively inspiring. There is, of course, the strong possibility this was a crime of opportunity by a stranger. But even still, those at the party would always be the first to be investigated. Two people who were involved in Maddie's life were sought out. One male, whom she was romantically interested with, was at the party, But after he said he wasn't interested in Maddie and just wanted to be friends, she was a bit upset, and it is not known how much investigators did investigate this male. A second male was one who was interested in Maddie, but she did not reciprocate. He apparently was a little mad upon learning she wasn't interested, so it is always the possibility. But again, like male number one, it is not known how much investigation he has been under. And since no one from the party have been publicly linked and arrested, it is safe to assume authorities have given it all their due diligence. This does invariably make the stranger prospect appear the most likely. The sheer size and remoteness of Hogsback Lake makes it a prime place for anyone to be in the area. As we know, the party was on Facebook, with no real stringent vetting as who could RSVP. That said, by far, even if a stranger had attended the party, would he even be noticed? Balduke has stated a rowdier group of people did show up towards the time she and her boyfriend decided to go, and it was also one of them who was responsible for her falling. Is it possible any of these rowdier guys hung back after the party, maybe seen Maddie alone and decided to do something bad? Yes, it is possible. Another possibility is someone who had neither no affiliation to Maddie and her friends was in the area that night, saw an opportunity of someone alone in the campground, and decided to do similarly. Strangest theory of all is Israel Keyes, infamous serial killer, has been put forward as a possible connection. Keyes is known to plan his murders in advance, choosing areas and leaving kill kits in various locations, usually buckets he purchased with cash, filled with rope, knives, duct tapes and such. He would then scout the areas he chose to visit, rent cars, and then he would choose his victims. Keyes lived in Anchorage, Alaska, which was a 33-hour drive from Hogsback Lake, and it is known Keyes did fly from Alaska to Chicago just a few days after Scott's disappearance, rented a car, which he then drove 1,000 miles to Vermont when he then committed a double homicide. So vast distances did not seem to deter Keyes, who went to great lengths to not only murder, but get away with it. Though, at first glance, Keyes would seem like the perfect suspect, being that he's a ghost, not fazed by arduous journeys in order to fulfill his murderous propensity. One of Keyes' MO did include robbery of his victims. Scott, who enjoyed having nice things, had gone missing, leaving numerous amounts of expensive things behind, such as her purse, an expensive camera, her newly purchased motorbike gear, rings, earrings, to name a few things. To think someone like Keyes, who relied on his victims to hand over valuables in order for him to fund his next murder, it is unlikely to consider he would have left any of these items he could have easily pawned off. As stated in the Highway of Tears chapter, the Scott family have made it perfectly clear they do not want their daughter's case to be listed as part of the Highway of Tears. This case has been equal parts fascinating and frustrating to research. Like so many people in the true crime community, I cannot believe someone who has gone out with the idea of just camping and drinking could disappear so quickly, and at a function that we often deem safe. Parties are supposed to be safe, filled with friends we all know, trust, and what makes Maddie's case so heartbreaking is the ripples of her presence have not waned. They have reverberated these past 10 years and touched so many lives, not only in Vancouver, Canada, but across the world. Madison, Maddie Scott, is missing and presumed under foul play. She went missing from British Columbia and was 20 years of age. She is a Caucasian female with ginger auburn hair, hazel eyes. She is 5'4" and weighed 160 pounds. Defining features were a bird silhouette tattoo on the inside of her wrist, and her nose was pierced along with her ears. She was last seen in a black t-shirt and blue Capri jeans. There is a $100,000 reward being offered to anyone with information that leads to the recovery of Maddie or the persons responsible for her disappearance. Tips can be phoned in to the Vanderhoof RCMP at 250-567-2222, or to remain anonymous, call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-TIPS. Alternatively, there is a mailbox, 1190 Vanderhoof, BC, VOJ, TREAO or use TIPS page.
We live it 24/7, that she is missing. And it's our child. It's, you know, she's, to some people, she may just be, you know, a girl that's missing to us. Like, she's our world. She's our daughter. And we need to find her. We need to get her home where she belongs. This is just, it never lets up. Never. You're reminded of it constantly.
I don't believe for an instant that Maddie would run away from her family, that she wouldn't want to come home to her family. She has a family that loves her very much, and I can say that something has happened that is preventing Maddie from coming home to her family, and we're going to continue our investigation till we find out what happened to Madison Scott.
We can't just leave it rest like this. It doesn't feel safe. Everybody's heartbroken. Maddie made such an impact on so many people and continues to, and we just really need her home.